So we continue our Shir in Pirkei Avos, and we are up to Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Beis. And here you look at the top of the sheet, and you will find Hillel Omer. We have a teaching of Hillel. Heve mi talmidav shel Aaron. We should all strive to be like the students of Aaron. Ohev shalom verodev shalom. Ohev esabrios umekarvan latorah. And I think before we get into the specifics of the lessons that we are taught in this Mishnah by Hillel, what I'd like to do this week is focus on Hillel himself. Hillel was the author of this Mishnah, but he was such an important personality. And Hillel was such a staple of all that Torah Shebaal Peh represents. And therefore his life, that was so deeply inspiring in many different ways, is worthy of our consideration before we get to the specifics of what it is that he taught us in this Mishnah. In general, spending time learning and understanding the legacy and the life and the experiences of the great Torah giants has inherent value. If you look in the Chazon Ish, number Aleph, the Chazon Ish writes in the middle of one of his letters, Roy lahamachazikim b'Torah Hashem. It would be worthy of somebody who is a person who believes in Torah Hashem, ladas es gedoleha, to make an effort to understand the ways and the experiences of the great people who followed the Torah Hashem. Ki hayidia shal chachme hadar libam umidasam, Hain, hain, gufei Torah. Because says the Chazon Ish, this is not just wasting time. This is gufei Torah. We will better understand the Torah when we understand how the great leaders of Torah communities have chosen to lead their lives. And therefore, writes the Chazon Ish, it is worthwhile to spend time doing this. My father told me that he remembers being told that in Europe, there were many great Rashi Yeshiva who on Friday nights used to sit down with the Talmidim, and instead of having some kind of shir, they would sit around the table and they would tell stories about great tzaddikim, about great talmidei chachamim. And that was not considered to be a distraction. It was not considered to be a waste of anyone's time. They all had plenty of good things to do, but inherently, says the Chazon Ish, this is valuable. And there is so much we can learn from the lives that they lived. Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the Shari Tshuva as well, if you look at number Beis, Yadua adavar ki min hamidos hanos lesaper b'shvach hachachamim v'hatzaddikim. It is a worthwhile endeavor, says Rabbeinu Yonah, to familiarize ourselves and to speak about the great attributes of the leaders of our people. Kemosha Nemar, as the Pasuk says in Mishlei, V'chakar kivodam kavod. When you spend time, chakira means when you try and investigate, when you try to understand, when you try to delve into it, it will be a great honor, not for them, but for you, because it will make you a more honorable person when you learn about the lives that they led. Rav Kook writes in one of his Svarim, and I'm not very familiar with the Sifrei HaRav Kook at all, but I saw this quoted in another Sefer in his name, but this is a direct quotation from what he says. And he writes that there is a value in learning about the great leaders, and that is HaKorei HaRoes HaHod VeHaHadar. When you understand and appreciate the glory and the majesty of the lives that they lived, HaKedusha VaTiferes HaPnimis, the inner beauty that they conducted their lives with. Shezachalahem ha'ish ha'gadol, writes Rav Kook, Misorer b'kirbo ratzon ha'panimi lenasos kocho gamhu laleches bidrachav. It should inspire and encourage a person to try to emulate that in some way. Ve'em lo yuchal l'chakos chikoy shalem. If you feel that you're not on a level to model and mirror that kind of behavior entirely, Al kapanami efshar klal shelo yazuz al yedezeh mimakum shifluso, says Rav Kook, I certainly won't remain the same human being that I was beforehand. Will I totally transform and become something else? Probably not. Will I now rise to the level of the great people that I'm describing? Probably not. But will I be able to change something, even some small part of my personality? Will I be able to try to change some small aspect of my life? Absolutely, writes Rav Kook. And therefore, he says, there is a reason to do it. Livchar gamhu ez adrachim tovim v'kimnyanim yikarim ka'ela. And therefore, he writes, that is part of the important value in learning. So let's try to find out who Hillel actually was. Hillel goes down in history as Hillel Hazaken. It's not because he was an old man, but it's because Hillel was considered to be a great leader. And Zaken stands for Zeh Shekana Chachma. Hillel was a great Talmud Chacham. Hillel was, like the Mishnah writes in Maseches Edios, Hillel and Shammai were Avos HaOlam. They were like the fathers of our people. They were one of the founding fathers of all of Torah Shebaal Peh. And this is so important for us to learn about the unique character traits of who Hillel was, what his life exemplified, what he stood for, and what he represented, that we can walk away with something special from that study. So Hillel grew up in Bavel. And what is very strange about it is, we have sometimes a mistaken impression that when the Beis HaMikdash was functioning, and this was in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, some people think that, of course, all Jews lived in Eretz Yisrael. And that is a mistake. As we know, the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Jewish people went into exile. Before they went into Galus, they were promised by the Navi that they would only be there for 70 years, upon which they would have the opportunity to return to Eretz Yisrael. After 70 years of being in Galus Bavel, Ezra goes around and tries to galvanize the Jewish people to come back to the land of Eretz Yisrael. He does a very poor job in doing that. Very few people responded to his calling. Most of the Jews remained in Bavel, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the opportunity to come back, which is the same story that we have today. God gave us the opportunity to come back. God gives us a land that we can call home, and most of the Jewish people have chosen not to live in Eretz Yisrael, even in our generation. The same story that happened then is what has happened today. So much so that Ezra is standing on the cusp of going into Eretz Yisrael, and he looks around at the group that is assembled there, and he says, I don't even think we have enough Kohanim to run a functioning Beis HaMikdash. I don't think we have enough Leviim to do what needs to be done. And therefore he turns back to try to get a few more Kohanim, a few more Leviim. He says, we don't even have the requisite number of people to get done what we need. In the end, Ezra goes, he rebuilds the community in Eretz Yisrael, Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, and then life seems to be going pretty well. What we often forget about is, there was a very large Jewish community with great Torah centers, with great Torah scholars that were living in Bavel, that had no connection at all with the community in Eretz Yisrael. And Hillel was one of those individuals. Hillel's parents gave birth to him and raised him in Bavel. And he spent the first 40 years of his life in Bavel, studying there, raising his family there. When he turned 40, he said to himself that there are two great giants who live in Eretz Yisrael by the name of Shmaya v'Avtalion. And he said, it would be such a lost opportunity if I never had the chance to study under their leadership. So he travels with his family to Eretz Yisrael in abject poverty. And he really has a tremendous struggle to be living in Eretz Yisrael, but he says he wants to go to learn under the leadership of Shmaya v'Avtalion. That's what he does. After he spends time learning under Shmaya v'Avtalion, he then moves with his family back to Bavel. He moves back to Bavel, and upon turning 80 years old, anyone in the sandwich generation understands, when you turn 80 years old and you're trying to figure out where we're going to spend the next 40 years of our lives, it's not so simple to make a move at 80 years old. And yet Hillel, at 80 years old, picked his family up once again and said, it's time to move to Eretz Yisrael. This was always our dream. This is where we belong. And he moves the family back to Eretz Yisrael. It just so happens to be he had a wonderful Hashgacha Pratis, because he comes to Eretz Yisrael and he comes around Pesach time. And that year it happened to be that Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbos. And the problem then became, what is the protocol for Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbos? Do we offer the Karban Pesach on Shabbos? Do we wait till Matzoi Shabbos? Do we do it on Friday? So we all know the answer today because we have the Mishnah and we have the Gemara that tells us what to do. But in those days, there was no Mishnah and there was no Gemara. They were figuring it out. And the question then became, what should the protocol be? Are we supposed to offer a Karban Pesach this year on Shabbos? Should it be done on Friday? Should it be done on Matzoi Shabbos, the first night of Pesach? Nobody knew what to do. And Hillel now was the new member of the community in Eretz Yisrael, and he stands up and he says, you know, 40 years ago I came to Eretz Yisrael to learn under Shmaya v'Avtalion. And on that occasion, one fine day in Shmaya or Avtalion Shir, they were discussing this very question. What should be done with a Karban Pesach when it falls out on Shabbos? And Hillel then goes ahead to record and report what it is that he had heard from Shmaya v'Avtalion from the earlier generation. And everybody is in awe. What a great Talmud Chacham! And he knows so much. And therefore they all submit themselves to Hillel and they appoint him as the Nasi, 80 years old is when Hillel took over the leadership of the Jewish people. And therefore, from that time on, Hillel then became the great leader. And he was so successful in his leadership. And he was so effective in all that he did, to the point that the Gemara writes in Maseches Sukkah, I didn't put it on here, that when Ezra came back from Eretz Yisrael, he had a job to restore the Jewish life and Jewish tradition to all the Jews who were living there. Nobody knew anything. Think about Soviet Jewry, 70 years of a Jewish community being taken out of their land, being taken away from their culture, being taken away from all their traditions. It's enough time to make them forget everything. And that's what happened in the days of Ezra. Ezra had a task to rebuild, to reconstruct everything, and he was very successful in that. But then, after Ezra's passing, slowly, slowly things trickled down once again, and people began to forget what Jewish traditions and Jewish law was all about. And it wasn't until Hillel came along that the Gemara says, Chazra v'nishtakha, when Hillel, before he came into the position of leadership, once again the Jewish community forgot many aspects of Torah, v'ala Hillel ha-Bavli v'yazda. And Hillel ha-Bavli came from Babylon, came from Babel, moved back to Eretz Yisrael, and was able to revitalize the entire Jewish people, the entire Jewish culture. And he was so effective at doing that. The Medrash goes so far as to say that Hillel himself, in some respects, was considered a parallel or on par with Moshe Rabbeinu. Look at this Medrash, and we'll learn it together, number Dalid, where the Medrash tells us about a parallelism between Moshe Rabbeinu himself and Hillel HaZaken that we are describing here today. This Medrash can be found in Parshas Vezos HaBracha. Why is it there? Because in Vezos HaBracha, the Torah describes that Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the end of his life, and he says, Ben Me'a Ve'esrim Shana Anochi Hayom. As we know, Moshe Rabbeinu lives a fruitful life until the age of 120 years old. And here, commenting on that pasuk, the Medrash says the following. Ze Echad Me'arba Shemesu Ben Me'a Ve'esrim. Moshe Rabbeinu was one of four individuals that passed away at 120 years old, who lived a life of shlemus, who lived a life of complete perfection. The Eluhem. Who were those four? Moshe, Hillel HaZaken, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who by the way was a student of Hillel, who then took over the mantle of leadership after his teacher Hillel had passed away, and finally Rabbi Akiva. These are the four listed in the Medrash who lived a life of completion, a life of shlemus, 120 years. And then the Medrash goes further to parallel their lives. Moshe haya b'Mitzrayim mem shana. You know, sometimes when we read these parshios of Shmos, Va'era, Bo, B'Shalach, you get the impression like it all happened in the span of a week. It's not what happened. Moshe Rabbeinu, the very beginning of Parsha Shmos, we're told that he's thrown into the river. The daughter of Paro adopts him, brings him into the palace. And then it says Moshe Rabbeinu goes out from the palace, Vayar b'sivlo sam. How many years was he in the palace until he decided to venture out? Says the Medrash, it was 40 years. So the span of three psukim and chumash is a 40-year time period. We don't know anything about what happened then, but the Medrash says that was 40 years. Then we learn that Moshe has to run away for his life. He's a fugitive. He runs down to Midian, which is where he meets his wife. He stays in the house of Yisro. How long do you think he was there? 40 years.
Wasn't he in Cush first?
Okay, so he was on the run, but it was 40 years. And then we're told, Pirnes es Yisrael mem shana. When was it that the Ribono Shel Olam, when was it that God finally singled him out and said, now you are going to be the leader of the Jewish people? It's not like Moshe Rabbeinu knew this was going to happen. The first 80 years of his life, he was doing nothing of the sort. He was not a leader at all. Moshe Rabbeinu was living in the palace. Then he was on the run, living in the home of Yisro. He had no aspiration at all. At 80 years old, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to him and said, now it's time for you to have a career change. Now it's time for you to reconsider. I have a job for you to do now. You're going to lead the Jewish people from today on until the day that you die. Can you imagine? 80 years old. 80 years old, and yet, that, the Medrash says, was the effective leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. But it didn't stop there. Hillel HaZaken, Ala mi Bavel ben Memshana. Can you imagine? Hillel lives in Babylon and Bavel for 40 years. and that's where he raised his family, and that's where he went to school, and that's where all of his relatives were. That was the world that he knew. At 40 years old, he picks up and he says, you know, I should really go to the land of Israel. And he goes, and he makes a new life for himself there. Shimesh Chachamim Mem Shana. He spends the next 40 years of his life trying to learn as much as he could from all the greats of the generation. And again, at 80 years old, Hillel is singled out and he's told, now it's your time to take the leadership position of the Jewish people. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we're told, was in business for the first 40 years of his life. Shimesh Chachamim Mem Shana, the next 40 years of his life, he went ahead and he applied himself and he studied Torah and he became the great person that he did. And then for the last 40 years of his life, from 80 to 120, he was the leader of the Jewish people. And finally, Rabbi Kiva, who was the same story. At 40 years old, he began to study Torah. Upirnes es Yisrael mem shana. An amazing and astounding story that the Medrash tells us here. But I think this is lesson number one. That a person can grow and take new challenges upon themselves at any stage of life. Doesn't matter how old or young a person may be. There is never a time in life when it is too late for us to refocus or to restructure, to reconsider. Look what all of the greats of our people did. And for us to say, this is my way, this is what I've been doing, this is where I live, this is the community I'm used to, this is the kind of understandings that I have for what my life should be. Well, yes, that may have been until this point, but there's always an opportunity to reconsider and to refocus. In fact, the Medrash tells us that Rabbi Akiva, think about the story of Rabbi Akiva. So we know between Pesach and Shavuos, we have Sfiras HaOmer. And we know that we have some kind of remembrance for the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. And we have an observance of Avelus at that time. And on Lag BaOmer, we know the Shulchan Aruch says, we start to celebrate. And you ask yourself, if Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students, and even let's say that's an exaggeration, and the Gemara is just trying to say, everybody died. But whatever it is, Rabbi Akiva was showing up to 500 funerals a day. It's a lot of people. 33 days, do the math. 33 days, 24,000 people. What does it add up to? 700 funerals a day? Something like that? Anyone knows math here? Something of that nature, a lot. So let's say it's an exaggeration. So what, he was going to 300 funerals a day? And he has all the little Yisomim and Yisomos showing up at his door asking what's going to be? And all the Almanas walking around aimlessly, not knowing who's going to take care of them and how they're going to move forward? Can you imagine what a devastating time it was? And this was the entire life's work of Rabbi Akiva. This is what he worked his entire life to build. And everything was destroyed in 33 days. And you know what happened? On Lag BaOmer, everyone stopped dying and therefore we celebrate. Really? Everyone stopped dying? There was no one left to die. What is the reason to celebrate? Life was destroyed. There was nothing left. Why do we celebrate? And some explain perhaps the reason to celebrate is because of the next line in the Medrash where it says, the very next day, after all of this was over, Rabbi Akiva went Eitzel Rabbeinu Shebedarom. Rabbi Akiva said, my life is not over. I understand that everything has been destroyed, but we're going to start again. And Rabbi Akiva, at that old age, went to a new community, found five new dedicated and devoted students who would be interested in recreating everything that he represented. And they are the ones, in fact, who are the entirety, the fundamentals, the basis of all of Torah Shebaal Peh. Those five students are the ones that are quoted in all of the Mishnayos. They are the ones who reconstructed the entire Jewish culture and all of Torah Shebaal Peh as we know it for the next few thousand years. That is the reason to celebrate. Because Rabbi Akiva, at that old age, after suffering the horrible devastation that he saw and he experienced in his life, said, I can always take upon myself a new challenge and I will never give up. That is the same story as Hillel. That is the same story as Moshe Rabbeinu. It's the same story as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That is the same story of every great Jew. Every day is a new challenge. And there are no assumptions from what happened the day before. And just because life may have been led in a certain way, and we may have conducted ourselves in a certain kind of venue, or lived in a certain community, or experienced things in a particular way, it does not mean that that defines how the next chapter of our life is going to be. And in fact, Chazal tell us, why is it that Avraham Avinu was asked to do the Bris Milah at 99 years old? And the Medrash writes, the reason why is because Lila Medcha, it is to teach all of us. Avraham Avinu was not born a Jew. Avraham Avinu came to this on his own. And he went through a process of Geirus at the age of 99 years old to teach us, says Rabbeinu Yonah as well, that at every stage of life we have the opportunity to convert just like Avraham Avinu. In every stage of life we have an opportunity to make decisions and to restructure and refashion the lives that we live and reconsider and reevaluate all that life is about the same way that Avraham Avinu did. And just because we had preconceived notions that led us to this point does not mean that that will continue to define who we are going forward. And that is the lesson, as we said, of every great Jewish leader that we have ever encountered. Now we move to a second very important life lesson from the legendary life of Hillel HaZaken. And for this, we turn our attention to the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, I did not put it on here, but it's a line that we're all familiar with. And this is an insight I heard a number of years ago when I was in Smicha from Dr. Lamb. And it's an incredible insight. Dr. Lamb told us that you look in the Rambam and you'll see when the Rambam outlines what the process of Tshuva is supposed to be about, the Rambam writes that one of the critical components to what we need to say in the Vidui, obviously we need to make a confession. What we say in that confession is a good question. But the Rambam writes, one of the things that is critical for us to say is, Avol anachnu va'avoseinu chatanu. And you'll see that throughout the davening, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, or Vidui, whenever a person says it, you will see that line is stated there, Avol anachnu va'avoseinu chatanu. What is it about that statement that is so important? Why is it such a critical component to all that tshuva represents and all that this is supposed to be about for us? So he explained as follows. And I believe this is true. I don't think that most people in life are evil. At least most of the people we interact with. I don't think they're evil. I think most people are well-intentioned and consider themselves good people. And more often than not, they don't violate all kinds of sins with malicious intent. What happens? Most of us know right from wrong, and most of us usually make the right decisions and the right choices. What happens is that every so often, we come up with excuses, and we figure out how to rationalize our negative behavior. So it's not that we're bad people. It's we make a choice, we make a decision, and we rationalize in our own heads that, yes, this is a negative character trait, but in these circumstances, it doesn't apply. And based on what I'm doing, it's not applicable. That's often the response that we find, that people justify. And Dr. Lamb said that is the sickness of a person living life saying, Avol, Avol, Avol. Yes, I have a set of circumstances, but this, but that, but the other thing. And we have a million and one reasons to explain ourselves and to say why it is that certain behaviors are acceptable for us, even though we would never see them as acceptable for anybody else. It's a whole life of justification. It's a whole life of giving excuses. And this also applies not only to when somebody does something wrong, but in so many different aspects of life. I think all of us would agree. It would be wonderful for us to all be so engaged with our families, with our children, with our spouses, with our relatives, with our parents, and with everybody else that we feel close with. It would be wonderful. And we all think that that is an important value. The problem is we all have a million and one reasons to say why we don't have that as a priority. Because, but, I have to make money, I have to get a job, and I have to be busy with this, and I have to go there. And we have a million and one reasons to justify why it is that we don't spend time with the people that we think are most valuable in our lives. And that goes for so many different aspects of life. It is the syndrome of Avol. Everything is, yes, everything's perfect, I'm making all the right choices, but. And he quoted an amazing line from Prime Minister Levi Eshkol, and it's amazing to me. I don't believe Levi Eshkol was even a religious man, was he? I don't think so. I think he was secular. And it just goes to show how even the secular Jew in Israel knows more Tanakh than probably we do. And it's amazing when you read some of their speeches and you see how they make references to such beautiful lines in Tanakh and they have play on the words. So Levi Eshkol once said in a drasha that he gave many years ago that he quoted the pasuk in Eicha, where the Navi tells us, Darkei Tzion Avelos, which means that the streets of Yerushalayim are in mourning, because at the time of the Churban, Yirmiyahu HaNavi is describing that nobody was there and it was empty. And Levi Eshkol said, a play on the words, he said, the streets of Yerushalayim are empty because everybody is living a life of Avol. Darkei Tzion Avelos. Yes, the Jews in Chutz Laaretz say, we would love to come to Israel, we would love to move here, but the problem is the educational system is not what it should be, and the economy is not what it should be, and but this, but that, all the avels in the world. Darkei Tzion Avelos. That is the reason why the streets of Yerushalayim are empty, because the Jews in Chutz Laaretz can't stand up and say, I'm making a poor choice, and stop with all the excuses. And he said, I think it's a powerful statement, Darkei Tzion Avelos, that we can all live all of life giving those kinds of excuses. And that, he said, is the great tragedy. That is a tremendous phenomenon that we find, and it's a basic human tendency. It's our most instinctive defense mechanism. Whenever we're called out for doing something, we give an excuse. It's the easiest thing to do. Think back to the story of Yosef and his brothers. And there, before Yosef reveals who it is that they are talking to, he demands that his brothers leave one of their family members behind. He demands that one of them is going to be taken hostage. And that throws the family into a big discussion. And they start to have cheshbon ha-nefesh, and they start to think, how can this be happening to us? And all of a sudden, they start to think back, maybe it's because we were so evil to our brother Yosef. And they turn to one another and they say, Avol Hashemim Anachnu. Same word. Avol Hashemim Anachnu. We gave all the excuses in the world to rationalize our behavior then. We had all the reasons to do what we did. And we said that, yes, maybe it's better for Yosef. Here he is hallucinating with all of his dreams, and we'll never let him live it down, and we'll never give him a chance at life. You know what? Let him start a new life somewhere else. And we justified our behavior for sending him away. And we said, you know, it's not so bad for our father. Yes, he lost one child, but he has 11 others at home. We'll comfort him. Everything will be fine. Don't worry so much about it. And maybe we're not really murdering him. All we did was send him into the pit, and then we sold him down to Egypt. Maybe life won't be so bad for him. With all the justification, they stand up in the end and they say, Avol, because of all those excuses, Hashemim Anachnu. Because of all the Avols that we said, we got ourselves into this predicament. And that is what sometimes happens, that we catch ourselves after giving so many excuses, but people can live all of life giving a somewhat valid excuse for everything. In Parshas Vayigash, when Yosef finally reveals his own identity to his brothers, and he tells them who he is, we know that the Torah says, "V'lo yachlu echav lanos oso ki nivhalu mipanav." The brothers were unable to even speak in his presence because they were so overwhelmed. And the Gemara talks about the sense of overwhelming feeling that they had being in his presence. Oilanu miyom adin, oilanu miyom atochacha, and all the mefarshim struggle. Yosef didn't even give them musar. Yosef didn't say anything. All he said was, Ani Yosef ha'od avichai. What is so frightening about that? Why is everybody so overwhelmed? Writes the Balaturim there on Chumash. Listen carefully. One very cryptic statement he says, Shalohele al daitam sheyagia Yosef lemaila kazu. Why were they overwhelmed? Because they looked their brother in the face and they said, we cannot believe it. We cannot believe it. That with all the obstacles and with all the impediments that we put in your way, you could have stood up and said, I'm a depressed teenager who was thrown out of his house at 17 years old. I had no father, no mother to care for me. My mother actually died very early on in my childhood. I was a young man when I lost both of my parents. I was neglected by the rest of my family. I was abused by family members, and then I was sold down to a country where once again I suffered from abuse. I was tortured in jail, and I was estranged from everything that I knew, and I now am assimilated in a land that I'm not even familiar with. You know what? Nothing will ever come of my life. And Yosef said, I will not succumb to that. I have a choice to be made. I can give all the excuses in the world, Avol this, Avol that, and I can go to every therapist and they'll sign off on it. And they'll say, yes, you are justified in your feelings and you're right for saying this. And yes, life stinks and life is horrible and I get it. Your set of circumstances is impossible. But with all of that in mind, you have a choice to make. And the choice is, are you going to put yourself together and make a life for yourself, or are you going to live a whole life of excuses and blaming it on all the valid excuses? But because of that, you're going to lose out. Lo yachlu enochav lano so. The brothers were not able to look him in the face because they said, with all the impediments, with all the roadblocks that were in your way, you rose to become Yosef HaTzadik, the leader of the free world. It doesn't make sense. And here we are with nothing in our way. And here we are living a great life, living in our parents' home, having each other for camaraderie, doing all kinds of things together, and we're prosperous, and we're living in the land of Israel, and we have not been able to accomplish what you have because we spent our life giving excuses. And you spent your life saying, I won't succumb to any of the excuses. And I will not allow those choices to define the essence of my life. I am going to decide how my life is going to be lived. I have a right to choose. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave all of us Bechira Chavshis. And that is what the Baal HaTurim explains. Lo hela al daitam sheyagia Yosef lemaila kazu. What overwhelmed them at that moment was, how in the world did Yosef become this tremendous individual? How did he overcome all of the obstacles that were in his way? And none of us were able to do that. Why do I mention this? I mention it because the Rambam very famously writes the following passage. In Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Ches, the Rambam writes, we'll learn it together in number Hey. Kol Ish Mi Yisrael Chayiv B'Talmud Torah. Very incriminating words that the Rambam has. Every Jewish man is Chayiv to learn Torah. Bein Ani Ubein Ashir. Whether the person is wealthy or whether the person has no means at all. Bein shalem begufo, bein bal yisurim. Whether I was created with some kind of disability or whether everything just seems to be going easily for me in life. Bein bachur, whether I am young. Bein shahaya zaken gadol shetashash kocho. Or even if I am old and I've run out of energy. Afilu haya ani hamisparnes min atzadaka umachazer al apsachim. Even if I am a person who goes around peddling from house to house because I can't make it from one day to the next, I have no excuse, says the Rambam. Afilu bal isho ubanim. Even if I have responsibility to a family, even if I'm a married man and I have children that I need to take care of, chayiv lekvoa lo zman letalmud Torah, every single person has an obligation to learn Torah. Do I need to become the greatest Talmud Chacham in the world? Not possible for everybody. But must I make time to learn Torah? Absolutely. How does the Rambam know that? He knows it from a Gemara Meseches Yuma Daf Lamed Hei. And this is an amazing Gemara. Writes the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, in the end of days, all of humanity will come before God and have the difficult conversation about the experiences of our lives. And God is going to ask us all kinds of questions. Now says the Gemara, Ani v'ashir v'rasha ba'in ledin. Sounds like a joke, right? Three people walk into a bar. But the Gemara says you have an ani, you have a poor person, you have a rich individual, and a rasha who all walk in before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And here's their moment. Here's the conversation. La ani omrim lo, God sits him down and says, okay, let's have a conversation. You were a great Jew. I have a question for you. Mipnei malo asakta b'Torah. And the man looks God in the face and says, you want to know why I didn't learn Torah? I have a pretty fairly good answer. I'll tell you why. Because ani hayisi v'tarad b'mizonosai. I didn't have any money. Had you made me a millionaire, I would have had plenty of time to learn Torah. I wouldn't have had to be busy with my job. I wouldn't have had to been peddling around the community to make money. And God turns back to him and he says, klum ani hayisa yoser mehilel. Were you more poor than Hillel was? Did you have a more difficult life than he did? And if he was able to learn Torah, and if he had his priorities straight, then you have no excuse. And the Gemara writes, there in the Hemshech HaGemara, it says, Hillel mechayev es ha'aniyim. No poor person can ever come and say, life was too difficult for me because I was living in abject poverty, because I had nothing to my name, because I had to be so busy, and because of that I couldn't keep Shabbos, and because of that I couldn't do this, and I couldn't do that. Says the Gemara, look at Hillel. He was the paragon of difficulty. He was the paradigm of suffering, of somebody who had nothing. And look, he had a choice to make. Am I going to live a life of excuses? And the excuses seem to be all valid. Am I just going to live a life and say, look what God has handed me, and because of that, I am not going to be a productive human being? Or am I going to look beyond all of that and say, I can overcome it. And to the best of my ability, I will overcome it. Says the Gemara, Hillel Mechayev Es Ha'aniyim. This is the second very important lesson from the life of Hillel, that life is not about avol. Life is not about excuses. And people need to learn to take personal responsibility. I know it's not in style to say that today, but it's true. We are all Baalei Bechira. Yes, the Ribbono Shel Olam puts certain life circumstances in our way, But we all have the ability to choose at some level. Can I recreate everything in my life? Of course not. But do I have the ability to make a choice at any juncture in life, what kind of opportunity I see myself being involved with, and what kind of life I want to have moving forward? Yes. Hillel says that's a choice that everybody has the right to make. It's a choice that Yosef HaTzadik made. It's what overwhelmed the brothers when they saw him. And it's a very important lesson we can walk away with from the life of Hillel himself. Now let's get to the third, and this is also of no less import than the first two. The Gemara tells us that Hillel and Shammai had so many disputes. So much so, the Gemara seems to say there were about 300 different issues that they were fighting about. All l'shem Shammayim, not because they hated each other. How do we know they didn't hate each other? The Gemara writes in Maseches Erevin that Hillel and Shammai even had their children marry one another, which is hard to understand because they disagreed about the laws of marriage. So the Gemara tries to figure out, well, who do they follow? You know that story about the woman, I'm sure it's a made-up story, about the woman who walked into the glasses store in Israel and needed a pair of glasses, and she said she wants the photo grays. And the man in the store said, you know, it's a big shiloh about Shabbos. Not sure you're allowed to have them on Shabbos, a whole big discussion. And she said, thank you very much. I asked my father, and he said it's okay. So the guy in the store said, what are you asking your father for? Like, maybe you should ask, somebody who knows. So she happened to be the daughter of Rabbi Yashiv, who was married to Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky. So in the store, apparently the story goes, they said, well, this one says that, and this one says this. So she said, I'm covered. I'm okay. So anyway, the story here is that it says that Hillel and Shammai, although they disagreed about many different issues, and some of them that were very relevant to marriage, somehow they figured out how to marry one another. And the Gemara says, even though they argued about the laws of Tumah and Tahara and Kashrus, somehow they ate in each other's homes, and they figured it out, and they were respectful of one another. So that was the relationship that was created between Hillel and Shammai. But then the Gemara says in Maseches Erevin Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. Fascinating Gemara. Let's learn it together. It's a number Zion. Amar Rab Abba, Amar Shmuel. Shalosh Shanim Nechleku Beis Shammai Ubeis Hillel. Shammai and Hillel had a dispute that went on for 3 years straight. I would have said, just give up, stop talking about it. But because they both were out for the truth, like the Gemara says, the Pasuk says, Ha'emes v'hashalom ehavu. That, says the Gemara, is a reference to the relationship that existed between Hillel and Shammai. They were both out for the emes. They both wanted to get to the truth of Torah. But in the end, ha'emes, as much as they fought for the truth, ha'emes v'hashalom ehavu, they loved each other. They had a great and very respectful relationship to one another, but they fought for 3 years about an issue because each one said, I hold the correct position on this issue. So the Gemara says they're fighting about it. Halalu omrim halacha kimosenu. Halalu omrim halacha kimosenu. Every day they walk into shul and they say, I just want to make an announcement. Opinion of Beis Shammai is the right opinion. And on the other side they start yelling, no, Beis Hillel is correct. And every day this is going on for 3 years straight. Finally, after 3 years, God decides he's going to intervene. Yatzas habaskal v'yamra, a heavenly voice can be heard, that said very famously, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. You know what? You're both right. A good Jewish answer. You're both right. Now, how can it be? You're both right, so what are we supposed to do? We're arguing about whether you're allowed to put the pot on the fire on Shabbos, or we're arguing about whether or not electricity is mutter or asur on Shabbos. Am I allowed to turn the lights on Shabbos or not? Beis Shammai says yes, I'm making it up. Beis Hillel says no, and you say they're both right. What do you mean they're both right? How can it be? What am I supposed to do? Says the Gemara, yes, you're both right, but halacha ke Beis Hillel. So it needs an explanation. What does it mean you're both right, but we follow one? So the Gemara says, whatever the explanation to that is, it's a whole other shir to itself, that is explained in the Achronim in great detail, but the Gemara here says both of them have valid positions, but we follow Beis Hillel. Now the Gemara asks the million-dollar question. If you say that both Shammai and Hillel had valid opinions, and both of them were saying something true, mipnei ma zachu Beis Hillel l'kvoa halacha kemosan, then why, in fact, do we follow Beis Hillel's opinion? Why should we follow him? If Hillel and Shammai were both correct and both of them had valid positions, why do we follow Hillel? Answers the Gemara. It's not because Hillel was smarter. It's not because Hillel was a greater Talmud Chacham. In fact, the Gemara says, Shammai were the sharper Talmidim, and Shammai had the smarter students in his group. So why do we adopt the position of Hillel? Says the Gemara very simply. V'pnei shanavin va'aluvin hayu, v'shonin divrayim v'divrei beis Shammai. Because Hillel were gentle, respectful, and considerate human beings. And when they presented the whole story, when they presented the case, they would not only present their side, they would always go out of their way to present Beis Shammai's opinion as well. Because it's not about me, it's about the emes, it's about the truth. And if Shammai has a point, and it's a valid point, I need to think about it, and I need to consider it, and I need to understand it. And then the Gemara says, "V'lo oh, not only did they mention the position of Shammai, Elo shemakdimin divrei Beis Shammai lidivreihem. When they presented the two sides of the argument, they presented Shammai's position first. The first impression was you heard everything that Shammai had to say, and only then did Hillel interject and say, you know, but we disagree and we feel otherwise. And because there was such a respect, because there was such a humility in the process of the way that they studied Torah and the way that they transmitted it, therefore, says the Gemara, "Lelamedcha, it teaches you shekala mashpil atzmo Hakadosh Baruch Hu magbiho." If somebody is willing to live a life of humility, Hakadosh Baruch Hu is taking track of all of that. The Ribono Shel Olam will make sure that that person is ultimately lifted up. V'chala magbiya atzmo Hakadosh Baruch Hu mashbilo. Kala mechazer al agdula gedula boreches mimenu. If somebody is looking for that prominence, for the great position, yes, in the short term they may have it, but in the long term, it will be taken away from them. And the Gemara there writes in Maseches Shabbos as well, number Ches, Le'olam yehe adam anvesan kehillel, va'al yehe kapdan kishamai. Says the Gemara, you want to know why we've adopted Hillel's position? It's because of his tremendous sense of humility. And Chazal tell us that in general, when we're talking about spiritual growth, when we're talking about the study of Torah or anything in that realm, humility is such an indispensable component to growing as a God-fearing Jew. The Pasuk says in Parshas Truma, we're going to read it in just a few weeks, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the instructions of how to build a Mishkan. So we're told that one of the Kelim is the Arun, that obviously housed the Luchos, that housed the Torah. And then on top of the Arun, there was supposed to be a Kaporis. It was supposed to be a golden cover that was supposed to be sitting on top of the box itself. And when giving those instructions, the Torah says, Va'asisa kaporas zahav tahar. You have to make a kaporas, a cover, that is pure gold. Amasayim v'chetzi arka, va'ama v'chetzi rachba. 2.5 amos by 1.5 amos. Writes the Balaturim that you'll notice the measurements of the Aron are all in fractions. 2.5 by 1.5. It is all broken measurements. Why? Because the only way, writes the Balaturim, that a person can succeed in spiritual life is when I see myself as a fraction, when I see that there's more that I can grow, when I see that there's more that I can accomplish, there's more that I can develop. If I think I have everything worked out, if I think I know the answer to everything, then there's no room for growth, there's no room to advance. We call the great leaders of our generation Talmidei Chachamim, the students of great people, because a true Talmud Chacham is somebody who always sees themselves as a student, who always sees that there's more that I can develop, there's more that I can grow. I am not the leader. And although I may be in a leadership position, my perspective always is such that there's more thirst for knowledge, that there's more that I can understand, there's more that I can challenge myself. You'll notice, I would never have noticed, I shouldn't say that. The Kli Yakar writes, if you look in the paragraph that the Chumash has, where it describes the construction of the Mishkan, where it describes the construction of the Aron, so the Kli Yakar writes, if you look at it at home, you'll see in Parshas Truma, when the Torah gives us all of the details, every single letter of the Aleph Beis is listed there in that paragraph, except for the letter Gimel. And the Kli Yakar goes into a whole interpretation to explain why. Rav Shlomo Amar once told me, the chief rabbi said, that perhaps the reason why is because Gimel is for Gaiva. Gaiva has no place when we're talking about constructing an Aron, the most important spiritual endeavor that any Jew will ever be involved with. That, writes the Kli Yakar, is an insight that he had, and it's so important. The Gemara says that Torah is nimshel alamayim, that the Torah can be compared to water, as the Pasuk says, hoi kol tzamei l'chulamayim. There are references that compare Torah to water. And the Gemara says, what is that connection? What is the reference? That ma mayim holchem mimakam gavoa l'makam namuch. We know that water goes from the highest elevation and it trickles down to the lowest point. So too says the Gemara, you want to know who will be successful in spiritual endeavors? It's the person who understands, I need to have a perspective of water. I need to live life like that. And that was Hillel. That is why Hillel's opinion has been adopted for all eternity. Because of Hillel's sense of humility, because of Hillel's sense of modesty, because Hillel understood life is not about me, life is about the truth. And if it's about the truth, it doesn't hurt me to be respectful to other people. That is an important value that Hillel taught us. Now, all of this is beautiful, and it's all very nice. The problem is, the Gemara Maseches Sukkah seems to fly in the face of everything we just said. The Gemara there describes what happened by the annual celebration in the Beis HaMikdash of the Simchas Beis HaShoev. The Gemara there says, Misha la ra simcha zu la ra simcha miyamav. If you never experience what a Simchas Beis HaShoev look like in the Beis HaMikdash, you have no understanding of what great celebrations are all about. And the Gemara there says that there were people who would juggle fire, and there were all kinds of amazing things going on. The Leviim sang Shira, and it was so inspiring, and it was amazing. And then the Gemara says that there was an annual speech that Hillel, the leader of the generation, would get up and say. And what was his speech? You know, if only every year on Sukkot I can get up and say the same thing also, it would make life easier. But Hillel says the Gemara every year said the same thing. And what was that? One cryptic statement. He didn't want to hold everyone's attention for a long time. He said one thing. Look at the bottom of the page. And he said, Im ani kan, hakol kan. If I, Hillel, am here, then we have a reason to celebrate. Vim ein ani kan, mi kan. And if I, Hillel, am not here, then what is this all about? That is a problematic statement. And Rashi and Tosfos try to explain what it's all about. Especially in the backdrop of what the Gemara says, that Hillel was the anvasan, he was the ultimate person who exuded humility. So how do you explain the statement? What does it mean? So my father writes in one of his svarim that Rav Soloveitchik said, there's a major difference between humility, and sometimes a person goes to the extreme. Like the Rambam writes in the Shmona Prakim. The Rambam says, in the second parak of Pirkei Avos that we'll get to in another couple of years, the Mishnah says, Al tihi rasha b'fnei atzmecha. And the Rambam explains, what does it mean? If your perspective of yourself is that you're so lowly, and you're such an evil person, and you're so terrible, guess what? That's what you're going to be. Because you're going to start making choices based on your assumption of who you are. You talk to psychologists today, my own self-image that I created of myself will determine so much of what I will do and how I will behave, how I will respond. So Rav Soloveitchik said, although it's important for everyone to have humility, Hillel stands up and he says, don't forget, as humble as a person is, don't ever forget that the Ribono Shel Olam believes in you. Im ani kan, if God put me here, there's a reason for it. And He wants me to make choices, He wants me to make decisions. He wants me to be a productive person. And therefore I need to understand, I am a Baal Bechira. It takes a certain sense of gaiva to believe that I can decide how my life is going to be lived. It takes a certain amount of self-confidence and reassurance that yes, I have the ability to choose how I'm going to spend my life. It's not all going to be left in the hands of others. It's not all based on nurture. It's not all based on where I was raised, what schools I went to, what opportunities I was given, what kind of parents I had, how many terrible circumstances I went through. No, Hillel says, stand up and believe in yourself and understand, Im ani kan, if I am here and God wants me to be here, it means that God gave me the opportunity to make choices and decisions in the life that I live. Hakol kan, I have the opportunity to live a meaningful life. Some of Harsham explain, when we describe the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu in Chumash, it says, Va'ish Moshe Anav Mikol Adam Asher Al Pnei Ha'adama. And some explain that in describing the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu, we are first introduced to V'ha'ish Moshe. Moshe was a man. Moshe was a person who understood, I stand for something. I can make a difference in the world. Does that take away from his humility? Absolutely not. If we don't understand that we have the opportunity in life to make a major difference and to make something happen, we will never, ever be able to accomplish anything. And therefore, when being introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu, we are told, V'ha'ish Moshe. He stood up and he understood, just because I'm a humble human being. Just because I understand my place in the world does not mean that I don't believe in the opportunities that I myself have been given by God. That is a bechira that every human being has the choice to make. And therefore, Seder of Soloveitchik, it is not at all a conflict for the great Amdasan, for the great, humble, righteous, modest individual Hillel to stand up and say, Imani kan hakol kan, I believe in myself and that's why I became who I am. And all of us have the opportunity to do the very same. But let me just share one final mashal on this point. We have 2 minutes left, may I take three, where the Mefarshim try to explain what does this actually mean, im ani kan hakol kan, im ein ani kan mikan. So I once read the following beautiful mashal. There was a community in Europe where there were two shuls right down the block from one another. And every year, one shul happened to be a very wealthy shul, and the other shul was very simple people who didn't have a lot of means. And every year on Simchas Torah, they would look at the shul down the block and say, wow, they're doing something right. Somehow they're all very excited. Somehow they're all celebrating. And us by here in our shul, I don't know, it doesn't seem to have the same kind of feeling. So they send a few people in there to try to find out, what are they doing differently? What can we learn from them? And what they see is that right before they start the hakafos, they take out all kinds of schnapps, and everybody drinks away. And by the time it comes to the hakafos, everybody's in a great mood. So shame on those shuls that think that's the way to celebrate Simchas Torah. If you can't be excited about the Torah itself, I don't know why schnapps is supposed to help you. But anyway, this is what they did. The poor shul says, you know, we would love to do the same. It would actually change the atmosphere of our Simchas Torah. The problem is we can't afford it. We don't have money to buy all this schnapps to enjoy ourselves. So one man stands up, he says, I have a great idea. Tomorrow I'm going to put a barrel in the front of the shul, an empty barrel. And every Shabbos we all make kiddush, we all sit at the meal, we all drink a little bit. So Shabbos afternoon when you come back from mincha, take the leftovers in your kiddush cup, and everyone's going to come to shul and pour it into the barrel. And at the end of the year, when it comes next year, Simchas Torah, we're going to have a full barrel. We'll all be able to enjoy ourselves. Great idea? That's what he does. The first week, he's at home making kiddush, and he says to himself, you know, this was my great idea. I'm the one who's going to save this whole community. I'm going to solve the problem. You know, the issue is that I'm really not interested in giving my schnapps away to the rest of the community. But I don't want to stick out. I know everyone's going to show up to shul with their kiddush cups and pour it in. So I'll just put some water in mine. And what's the big deal? It's not going to ruin anything. A whole year of everybody putting schnapps and I just pour a little bit of water in, it's fine. So that's what he does. Takes some water, comes to shul, dumps it into the barrel, thinks that nobody notices, moves on with life. And this is going on week after week. Everybody's showing up, pouring in their leftovers, and the barrel is filling up. Comes to the end of the year. Comes Simchas Torah, they open it up, and the Gabbai says, here we go. This is going to be the moment of truth. And he's all excited about it. And he takes out the first glass and he sees it's all water. The same great idea that he had is the great idea that everybody else had. And everybody assumed, well, somebody else is going to bring it. It's not going to be my problem. And I'm not going to ruin it. So as long as everybody else brings, if I bring water, it's not so bad. In the end, that's what everyone did. Hillel stood up and he said, we all have moments of inspiration in our lives. And how often have you been somewhere where it's a very inspiring moment, and you see people turning to each other and saying, if only my neighbor, the horrible human being that lives right next door to me that I can't stand, if only that person was at this drasha, if only that person came to this inspiring moment and heard what was said, imagine how much they would grow. And we always say, if someone else's job, this is all for somebody else. And Hillel stood up and he said at this very auspicious moment, Im ani kan, if I take responsibility for the fact that I am here, and there's a reason why I'm here. Because I came to grow. I came to be inspired. If I take responsibility for myself, then hakol kan. If every member of this room, said Hillel, stands up and says, yes, my life is in my hands and I have the opportunity to be inspired. And I have the opportunity to take it seriously and to make a difference in my own life. Then imagine what all of us will walk away from. An experience like this. But says Hillel, im ein ani kan, if each person says, I'll bring the water, and everybody walks away and says, this would have been inspiring for somebody else, and this would have been uplifting for my neighbor, for my friend, for my spouse, and they walk away with nothing for themselves, then mikan, that of what value was this gathering? Then why are we here? And that is another part of the life and legacy of Hillel. As we study next week, the message that Hillel shares with us in this particular Mishnah, let us first keep in mind the incredible life and legacy of what Hillel actually represented. So often in Pirkei Avos you will find that the Mishnah writes, Hu Haya Omer, which the Mefarshim explain means, his essence exuded these values. It's not that he used to stand up on a podium and say this. It's that if you were exposed to this person, you knew what they represented. This is what Hillel was. This is what Hillel represented in every aspect of his life. And this is something that we can walk away with learning from him. Like Rav Kook said, do we need to be Hillel? We will never be Hillel. But must we walk away from a study of Hillel's life with some component, with some takeaway, with something that we can say will effectuate some kind of change in the lives that we live? That, says Rav Kook, is imperative. That is a choice we all have the ability to make, and it's a choice that we hope we all will be able to make. I will see all of you in Mirza Shem next time.